We're talking about screen time and adolescent health on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The advocacy group Common Sense Media says screen time spiked in the pandemic for young people over 7 hours a day. And under our roof, it is a constant battle to walk that line of them wanting to watch YouTube videos and play video games and then also do legit homework on their school laptops. So we've got those outbursts when they point at you, Mom, and say, well, you're on a device. Why can't I be? Join in on excessive screen time for kids, their mental well-being, 800-642-1234. Dr. Suzanne Sampang is Senior Medical Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. She's Associate Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Sampang, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. There has been some debate in the medical and scientific community being fairly split about whether tech addiction is a real thing with kids. How do you approach it? How do you see it?
Well, I think whether we call it addiction or not, I think that definitely use can become problematic. And I do see a lot of correlation between how we define, let's say, an addiction disorder with, let's say, drugs of abuse and technology. There's a lot of overlap in the symptoms that we see.
Okay, so you can see the overlap there. But what does your profession say, or you know, the diagnostic manual, or statistical manual, I think it's called. But you know, how does your profession approach this?
Well, this is a really rapidly evolving field and a field of active study. So the diagnostic and statistical manual, which you mentioned, doesn't formally have a diagnosis of digital addiction, but it is certainly an active area of study.
An active area of study. And I wonder, how do you see an addiction to technology or digital devices develop? How does that come up?
Well, it can start by, let me put this in context. You know, we live in a digital age where, you know, kids are using electronics as part of their everyday lives, whether that's part of school, whether that's part of their social life. And so our kids are more and more immersed in it. Where we start to talk about things like addiction for technology is really when it starts to affect kids' normal development and functioning. And so that's when we start talking about, is this an addiction, and is it something that needs to be addressed clinically? And so what some problem signs that we may start to see, and this is where it really kind of lines up with, you know, substance addiction, is that kids are thinking about gaming or technology all the time or a lot of the time, and they start to feel bad about, you know, emotionally or mood-wise when they can't play their games or get online, and they need to spend more and more time on their electronics to feel good. And then when parents or teachers notice that it's a problem and start to say things like, you know, you need to get off your electronics, or you need to spend less time on it, they're not able to cut down or stop their use. And then their use of electronics then is also supplanting or getting in the way of other healthy activities. And that then leads to problems with their relationships and school, or if they're a teenager and have a job, it gets in the way of that functioning. And that's what really when we call it problematic.
It can really, really snowball. I'm going to reintroduce you here. Dr. Suzanne Sampang, Senior Medical Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Cincinnati Children's. As we look at the issues around tech addiction, children, and excessive screen use, screens all around them, you can join in how you approach this in your household, 800-642-1234. And so, you know, talking about getting away from screens and, you know, that lack of interest in activities that don't involve screens. Like they once used to like to play sports or like to play outside, maybe like to even play with friends with Legos. And those things are no longer providing joy or the same amount of desire. Might that be an indicator that something is wrong?
Definitely. Definitely. When things that maybe pre-problematic use used to be fun or interesting or exciting for your kids and they're no longer doing those things, that would definitely be a warning sign.
Is media overuse, screen overuse, is this masking a symptom of something else like anxiety or depression, ADHD?
We do know that it is a bi-directional relationship. So we know that kids particularly who have mood or anxiety problems are more susceptible to problematic use for a various number of reasons. We also know that the adverse is true, that people who use technology and addiction excessively can lead to mood and other emotional problems.
So there could be a lot of interconnecting things there that I would imagine as a psychiatrist you would need to be working through as well.
For sure, definitely.
And what about the brain development? The brain doesn't fully develop until you're in your mid-20s. Could an excessive amount of screen time, digital time, lead to cognitive problems in children?
And, you know, the jury is really out on that. We don't really know what the downstream effects of it is. I mean, what we have said even before technology became so embedded in our kids' lives is that a well-rounded stimulation of your brain, so that's physical, emotional, academic, leads to healthier brain development. So we want kids to read. We want them to be physically active. We want them to have robust social relationships. And the same is true in the digital age as well. But as far as do we know that using screens has downstream negative effects, I don't think we know that if it's done in moderation.
How do you see the pandemic impacting what is going on here with screens?
Well, definitely prior to COVID, we were starting to see an increasing trend of electronic use in kids. And you mentioned at the start that it was, around 7 hours a day. Mm-hmm. After COVID hit, that really only escalated that trend. You know, because schools shut down and flipped to electronic or online education in most places. So they were doing school electronically. Their activities shut down. And so they didn't have the same outlets for entertainment and socialization. So that led to more time on electronics for those things. And so we saw the numbers really go up upwards of around 9 hours a day. And, you know, that's like not including time for schoolwork. And there were some good things about that. If you think about it, it was a way for kids to stay connected to friends, at least in some way, and not be so socially isolated. It allowed them to continue to maybe meet new friends with shared interests. They were able to do things like artwork online, or they could express themselves through writing online. And so there were some good things about it, but it did escalate the use of electronics in kids.
talking with a child psychiatrist, Suzanne Sampang, with us on how to help young people have healthy digital behaviors, healthy digital lives, confronting screen addiction, especially in teens. Let's talk more about kids and devices, tips you have in getting them off screens, rules in your house around screen time. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Sampang here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing screen time for children and teens on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. New study looked at pandemic screen time of nearly 600 university students, and it said that increasing screen time is considered a factor that increases addiction. Also, MSA, multiple screen addiction, and other types of tech-based addictions have become evident in the pandemic. That's newly published in the International Journal of Mental Health and Addiction. Bring your perspective on screen time, isolation, repetitive behaviors you see in your teens around checking their device. 800-642-1234. Dr. Suzanne Sampang with us at Cincinnati Children's Hospital with us for the hour. Let's go to Becky now in Racine. Becky, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. When I look at this with my kids, I have three young boys, and we talk about kind of the difference in apps and technology and games today, that they're almost made to be more addicting and to make you want to stay on them. So when we look at screen usage, when many of us were younger and, you know, the classic Nintendo games or television shows, there was a level of addiction to those. However, things are marketed and created specifically to keep us on. So I was just curious about your guests' thoughts on that and just helping with that awareness, because I think that's a big piece to this issue.
Yes, Becky, thank you so much. That is such an important piece. Dr. Sampang, your thoughts there.
Yeah, I love the observation and the comment. You know, the video game industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. And so, yes, there are financial reasons why video games are more engaging, more colorful, more active, targeting the interests of different age groups, because it is a money-making venture. So you are 100% absolutely correct and right on in your observations. And I love the fact that you're having those conversations with your kids, because I really do think it's those open conversations that are really the protective factors here.
I wonder, internet gaming disorder is listed as a condition for further study in your profession. What type of research do you want to look at specifically about gaming, about video game use?
Well, I think it's multifactorial. I think, you know, on a basic neuroscience level, it's looking at how those the use of those games and in kids with problematic use, how does it really affect the neurocircuitry or the pathways in our brain? Does that really align with our classical notion of addiction, let's say, when we talk about substances? So that's one level. And then really to see the other part of it is with problematic use, what are some effective treatments that can change the outcomes for those kids and ultimately improve their functioning?
Along the line, I interrupted. Go ahead.
And I said, I was just going to add, and then we also look at the correlates between, you know, internet gaming use and other electronic use, and how it correlates with other psychiatric illnesses, such as mood disorders, anxiety. Eating disorders is another area that's garnered a lot of attention recently.
Along the lines of gaming, though, how do you feel? I've seen just such a rise in gamification and learning and trying to steer kids to do the right thing through kind of gaming. How do you feel about trying to gamify balance with screens, like keeping score and offering kids rewards for turning away from behavior that's becoming a problem with screens and all of this gamification?
Well, I think you bring up a good point, which is that it's not an all or nothing thing. It's not that technology is all evil and is going to destroy the brains of our kids. But there are a lot of positive things that can come from this, as you called it, gamification. You know, I think it can promote learning. It can help promote skills such as problem solving. It can help with development of fine motor skills and coordination. We certainly see this in, our developmentally delayed population or autism population, and it can really help promote some of those kids. But it's really this balance, and how do you strike that healthy balance? And the formula for that healthy balance is going to be different for every family and every kid.
Talking with Dr. Suzanne Sampang about the rise of screen time in our youth, how to address this at home. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Alreka is joining us from Madison. Hi, Alreka. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I had more of a comment than a question, I guess. But my comment is that in Madison, in the school system, there has been, since a few years, a Chromebook given to every child. And the Chromebook is supposed to be used every day for learning at school and also for doing homework. And this has made my kid, with the pandemic and the virtual learning, it was good to have that Chromebook. That's the way they learn because they couldn't go to school. But now they're back in school, and this Chromebook follows them through the school day, in the evening. They do their homework on the Chromebook, and then they want to have some fun and do their video game time on the computer too. And for parents, this has made it, quite difficult because we try to limit their screen time, but now they're on the screen doing the homework plus the video game, and it's an awful lot of screen time. And I really wish we go back to no Chromebook in the kids' hands at school and go back to like it used to be.
Alreka, thank you so much. Dr. Sampang, how do you walk that line when Chromebooks are like attached at the hip? They're being used in all parts of homework and learning.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it does highlight, that the need to have that balance. On the one hand, the internet is so great. It's like kids have an encyclopedia at their fingertips, When I was growing up, an encyclopedia was a volume, multiple volumes, 30 volumes of books that wasn't up to date and is out of date in a couple of years. And now to have this whole gamut of information at their fingertips, which is great in a lot of ways, but we need to put some controls around it and supervision around it. And so I think schools have come a long way in trying to set up controls on places where you can and cannot go on those school-issued Chromebooks. But that's another ever-evolving field. It's a company's full-time job to kind of keep up on all of the different ways that those parental controls and school controls get out of date so quickly, if you know what I mean.
Well, as we see students needing those computers for school assignments, being issued them, and they, will need tech skills to manage the workplace, how can we teach skills about healthy use of tech? Because the kids will need to learn how not to be distracted. They will need to learn how to close that laptop and not procrastinate. And I'm trying to think of all the things that, that I have difficulty with. So how do you teach those healthy skills?
Yeah, I think this is the new part of parenting, right? Is that this is things that we have to teach our kids. And we have to also introduce them at age appropriate times in their development, because, you know, what's electronic usage that's appropriate in an 8 or a 9 year old is different than a 12, 13 year old, which is different from a 16, 17 year old. And so, you know, introducing those things in a developmentally appropriate manner. And then I think making sure, number one, that it's safe. You know, we always, as a physician, I always think about, you know, what are all the safety risks? And that's part of the things that we need to teach our kids about electronics use, is all of the safety things. You know, we would, you know, that, like, talking to someone with a screen name in a chat room is essentially talking to a stranger, you know? And so I think we need to introduce that concept. I think we need to also make sure that kids aren't giving out any of their personal identifying information to strangers. We need to make sure that they never meet with, you know, people that they don't know in real life. They know, they don't meet them or ever agree to meet anyone that's a stranger.
Let's pause right there with child psychologist Suzanne Sampang, and we will pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're exploring screen time limits and the dangers of digital addiction, a growing area concern as screen time spiked for kids in the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You know that phone keeping the toddler completely absorbed in a cart at the grocery store checkout? My kid's happily playing Minecraft till the cows come home. Screens being the way we carry out so many life functions, and teens encountering destructive messages to their well-being on social media. You can join in on devices, how you set limits, questions you have, 800-642-1234. Dr. Suzanne Sampang is at Cincinnati Children's, Senior Medical Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, with us for the hour. Let's bring in Sarah now in Madison. Sarah, hi, what is your situation?
So I have two teenage daughters, and we are moving from the kind of managing their lives stage to being more of a consultant. And I have read lots of books on this topic, and it's very difficult to find very practical advice, like even down to what's a great, like, process of managing the actual screen time and content as they move through high school. I understand kind of the philosophical piece, but finding practical advice has been more difficult, which it's understandable. Kids are all different. But I guess I'm just looking for a little more practical guidance.
Oh, Sarah, thank you so much. Dr. Suzanne Sampang.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, as you've alluded to, it's not a one size fits all. And when to lighten up on supervision, when to allow no supervision, especially for teenagers, with more checking in. It is an individualized decision depending on the kid that you have in front of you. And so, you know, whether how to do, that's why you don't see any sort of prescriptive things around don't do this or limit the amount of time to X. There are some ground rules, I think, that you can just use as guiding principles, which are, you know, make sure that your responsibilities are done before you get on for, you know, your screens for entertainment purposes. So that's after homework, after chores are done. That if you set time limits within your family, that you stick to those. No screens during dinner time, you know, that's family time. No screens, you know, an hour before bedtime, because our brains really need time to wind down and not have that electronic stimulus to really let our brains start to rest. And then having those open conversations about, especially for teenagers, that everything that they see online is not real, and that we have to, as adults in their lives, be the sounding board for our teenagers on, you know, what's appropriate, how do you navigate difficult social situations that occur digitally.
I want to pick up here on being that sounding board, because Sarah, I'm really intrigued how your role as a parent, you describe it as moving now to more of a consultant role for your teenage daughters. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think this is something I actually learned from someone else, but it's this idea that as the kids, you know, when kids are little, you control most everything, their bedtime, what they eat, where they go, who their friends are. But as they get older, those are choices that they do and should make for themselves. And we play more of a consultant role in that, where we wait for them to ask questions and also sometimes interject. And also that's a little bit of a gray area and sometimes challenging to know, and we don't always get it right. But when it comes to screen time, this is challenging because, you know, like you said, it's not prescriptive because kids are different. It's not a one size fits all, but we often are parenting in silos and don't really know what's average. What are other families doing? What's typical? You know, you want them to have some comparable screen time to friends. You know, every family is different, but you want it to be somewhat the same, especially as they get older. And, you know, in 4 years, one of my daughters will be on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'm kind of walking this line between consultant and, you know, just being completely absent from, well, not absent, but, you know, just taking a real hands-off approach because she'll be on her own.
Dr. Sampang, how do you see that consultant role and the evolution there of Sarah's relationship as they make these decisions?
Yeah, I really think that the electronics discussion is an extension of how you would parent your teenager and other aspects of their lives. And so if you think about their other, let's say, in real life social relationships, for your teenagers, you might be checking in with them regularly about, like, hey, how's so-and-so? And, you know, I noticed that you're spending a lot of time with Joey. What's, you know, what are your thoughts about that relationship? And having those conversations, and in the meantime, also kind of instilling your family values and talking about what you value as a parent and a family, those things are very, I think, translatable to our kids' electronic lives as well.
But I think also that feeling I know I share with Sarah, when you see some behaviors, or if you just wonder, as you kind of feel like parenting in a silo, is what I see, is that normal in my kid? And, you know, I wonder too, what type of conversations should we be having with pediatricians about this?
Yeah, I think pediatricians are definitely part of the conversation. I think that they are our first line of advice for parents. And so I think pediatricians are more and more having these conversations with parents. I think touching base with your friends and because parents need a sounding board themselves. This isn't something new in a digital age. You know, we've always consulted with our friends or the parents of our children's friends about, like, hey, this is what's going on. You know, how are you handling this situation? And then I think it's also then knowing your child about, okay, so this is really normal for my child, who tends to be more introverted. And so maybe I want to encourage some social interaction on electronics media rather than, you know, just to enhance their social life. So I think it's that balance. And I think why it's so frustrating for parents is that it's not a one size fits all. We know that to look out for the problem signs, but, you know, raising kids in a digital age, we cannot cut them off from electronics either.
I would like to go into the clinical setting. What are the treatment options for children with digital addiction?
Yeah, the treatment involves therapy or counseling, and one mainstay of that for this and other problems such as mood disorders and anxiety is called cognitive behavioral therapy. And that's really the mainstay of treatment. And so what cognitive behavioral therapy does is it teaches children's this concept that how you think, your thoughts cause feelings, and those feelings can then influence your behavior. And when you have something like problematic electronics use, there can be these distorted patterns of thinking that occur that lead to the problematic behaviors. So, you know, an example like this might be, you know, the child thinking, you know, if I don't respond to this message right away, then I'm going to lose this friendship. They're not going to be my friend anymore, and I'm going to be ostracized. Or if they, or if this individual doesn't reply to my message, then I've done something wrong, and that means they don't like me. And it's really trying to address those distorted patterns of thinking to change the behaviors.
Talking with Dr. Suzanne Sampang, Senior Medical Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Cincinnati Children's, as we talk about screen time, excessive use of screens, and how to navigate this as a parent. You can join in what you've seen, what you tried, 800-642-1234. Dr. Sampang, when a child does go to therapy sessions, are they going alone? Are they going with a parent? What does that look like?
The parents are definitely involved because one of the components of treatment is going to be making sure that the child's use is safe, and engaging parents in some of those parental controls and defining what are the appropriate limits of use and helping parents remain consistent with that is really important. As you have an older child, a lot of that distorted thinking pattern will be more individual with the child. It gets back to that comment that the previous caller made about supervision versus consultant.
Mm-hmm.
With a younger child, it's going to be more about engaging parents around that supervision and consistency around setting the limits. That will be there in an older adolescent, but to a lesser extent, because you're going to do a lot more work with those teenagers around the distorted thinking patterns.
I would imagine, too, it gets more complicated and difficult when the parent setting the limits is also engaging in the behavior or has those tendencies with screens. How do you navigate that?
Yes. You know, we have to talk with parents about modeling good behavior. So this would be true in other aspects, but it's no less true with use of electronics. And so talking to parents about modeling a balanced life in real life, so a robust personal, physical work life that's not electronic, modeling, you know, not spending excessive time on electronics, modeling how you conduct yourselves on electronics, whether that's be social media platforms or texting or otherwise. And so really parents are central in being able to model healthy behaviors.
Cincinnati Children's child psychiatrist Suzanne Sampang with us, stays with us on excessive screen use, the clinical perspective, treating young people with tech addiction. Still time for you to join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Sampang here on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on the spike in screen time among youth. Here is one voice from the 2019 doc called Screenagers Next Chapter, helping teens in a screen and stress-filled world.
When I get stressed, I tend to like grab my phone and just like start scrolling on social media.
Maybe you're nodding your head yes to that. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Dr. Suzanne Sampang is a child psychiatrist with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Amber now in Milwaukee. Amber, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. Thanks so much for this topic. It's so timely. I have a 9-year-old son, and about 6 months ago, we got a Nintendo Switch thinking it would be a fun family activity during COVID and all of that, but it's become a problem. And I was just wondering if you could discuss like the role or relationship of like dopamine and other mental health issues. And then in addition to that, any advice you would have? We just started therapy to help with this, but it's quite addicting for him. So we appreciate this advice.
Yeah. Amber, thank you so much. Breaking up a little bit, Dr. Sampang, go ahead.
Yes, so Amber brought up dopamine. So the role of dopamine is the center of our, we know it as sort of the reward neurotransmitter. So all human beings are wired to seek out things that are positive or rewarding and to avoid things that are negative. And so we have this whole reward circuit in our brain called the mesolimbic pathway that regulates all of this. And dopamine is the center of that reward pathway. And so what we know about every drug of addiction is that it increases dopamine. And in addiction, that circuit gets desensitized so that you need more and more of the X, the positive thing, the drug, in this case, the electronics, to get the same response. And then over time, our receptors get desensitized so that you need to do it more and more to get that same effect. So that's the role of dopamine, whether that be electronics, food, substance of abuse. Dopamine is that reward neurotransmitter that plays a key role there.
It's alarming that a video game system that was supposed to bring some fun, some lightening up in COVID, turned out to be quite a danger to the 9-year-old who is now in therapy.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe where that setting limits, and that there's a saying that goes, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and setting those limits ahead of time. And it's one of those things that's much easier to come up with the plan and much harder to stick with it. And so being able to set those limits, and what I'm imagining is that your 9-year-old is starting to have tantrums when you're pulling them off of it. But trying to stay consistent with the rules, and then setting maybe the Nintendo Switch up as the reward for that positive behaviors. And so it's trying to make that shift now that that your child's in this, I need it.
Amber, I want to go back to you. What is coming up for you as you hear this?
Well, we've definitely tried that as a reward. He just finds so many ways to, you know, manipulate to try and seek out any opportunity for screen time. Even his school, you know, gives him a Chromebook. And so this Chromebook is also another sort, you know, of electronic. So it's been a struggle just navigating as a parent, and then being able to access therapy. I mean, we've just got into therapy, and we've been on a wait list for months and months and months. And so, you know, it's just an ongoing struggle. We're relieved in some ways that we have found a therapist, but we know it's going to take time and all hands on deck type of thing. So,
Amber, thank you for bringing that personal story. Dr. Sampang, you know, Amber saying it's going to take time. How much time? What might the timeline be like?
Boy, I wish I had a crystal ball, because I think for every, like so many things in this arena, it's very individualistic. My advice is to stick with it. Consistency is key here. And you're right, kids are savvy and they will try to push your buttons. And sometimes the path of least resistance is to give in or extend that screen time, or to say, okay, I'm going to give it to you now, but you have to do your reading assignment afterwards. The hard part is sticking to your guns, and consistency is key.
Let's go to CJ now in Racine. CJ, hi, you want to bring up esports?
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me on. So video game addiction is something that my family has struggled through with my own brother. But it also coincided as esports was growing in our schools, and he was on the team. He was a part of the program. And my question is there something schools are doing now to combat things like video game addiction or that screen time addiction in conjunction with their efforts to grow esports and get students into that field as well? And if they don't know of anything that they are doing, is there something that would work to help balance that out?
CJ, thank you. Dr. Sampang.
Yeah, this is a great, great question. And I will tell you that schools are, it is on their radar, just the whole impact of screens and social emotional development of their students. And so, you know, I'm being asked more and more to talk with schools and parents and about these issues, but the topic of esports is so new, you know, where kids and young adults are being, groomed as sports stars, just kind of like the pitcher on the baseball team or the quarterback of the football team. And this is completely brand new territory. And so I don't have, I think it will definitely throw a wrench into how these discussions will go over the next 10 years. So, and at this point, we don't really know, because it's not something that's been looked at. The other piece is, I think along the same lines is the whole advent of virtual reality and augmented reality. I think this is also the next layer that we need to look into and see how this fits into our lives.
We also heard from Jason in Manitowoc called Couldn't Stay With Us with a book recommendation came out yesterday called Outside Kids in an Inside World. It's about how to get kids engaged in nature during the digital age. And I bet, Dr. Sampang, there are a lot of books out there that parents can read.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I think the one, how to seek balance in our lives and getting them outdoors and being physically active. Is part of that equation, and how do you balance it and have electronics be a healthy part of kids' lives and our lives as well, adult lives too.
Dr. Sampang, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Suzanne Sampang is Senior Medical Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Associate Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at the University of Cincinnati. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.